Greetings, dear, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm, open-arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode is also brought to you by an app that I created called Still Believe. Still Believe transforms a picture in your home into video proof of your child's favorite magical characters. With the app, parents can catch the magic of the Tooth Fairy, leaving money under their children's pillow, or Santa delivering presents on Christmas Eve in their home. You download the app, take a picture, and we create the magic. We utilize feature film visual effects artists to transform your picture into video. Just tell your kids that you have a special app that can detect and capture the Tooth Fairy, then present them with the video proof in the morning. The look on their faces is priceless. Your Still Believe video is created in minutes, and you can then save it to your phone and share it on social media. The app is available for the iPhone and Android, and it's free to download. Our aim is to bring joy and wonder into the hearts of children around the world. Check it out at stillbelieve.co. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was clipping his toenails at his desk. I can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody, this is Maddie K.
And John.
And this is another episode of the Working Experience Podcast. We are going to be discussing the advent of 996, which
good old Jack Ma,
maybe John,
the CEO,
could explain it. I don't do well with numbers.
You never have, Matt.
No,
never have.
No.
So 996 is Jack Ma, the CEO of Alibaba in China. It's a shorthand for working 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So hence the 996. So 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week.
Now that's... Is that one time a year or...
No, that is 52 weeks a year.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Oh, Jack Ma. Where do they grow people
Like
you?
Little bit of hustle for you.
Yeah, a little bit of hustle. Why isn't it 7 days a week? I don't understand. Why isn't it 997?
Yeah, please. I mean, it really should be, so 9 to 9 p.m., what is that? That's 12 hours?
Yeah, 12 hours.
I mean, come on. Back in the day, you used to push 120 hours a week.
Yeah. What happened to Sunday?
12 hours is a week.
What's he doing week. On Sunday? Sitting around?
Yeah, taking a break.
You know, today I went out and got lunch. And when I came back, just before I fell asleep for my afternoon nap, I was thinking about how I could maybe work harder, and then I kind of fell asleep for 2 hours, and I didn't come up with anything, but I got a nap in. Let me put it that way. I got a 2-hour nap in. So
well, yeah. Jack Ma is worth around $40 billion.
Thank goodness.
I mean, so you got to think, you know, $40 billion, it's not enough. He still has to hustle.
I wonder how many, how big is a normal coffin? What's that, like probably 6.5 feet by 3 feet, something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, cube sort of idea. So I wonder how many coffins will be required to stuff his $40 billion in to bury with him once he's dead. Because that must be the plan, I guess.
He's definitely taking it with him.
Ma took to social media recently to voice his support of China's intense work culture, known as 996, which refers to working from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. Well, you know, it's not... he's supporting this culture because it makes him wealthier. I mean, you know, of course he supports it.
Yeah, everyone... He's got to preach it to the masses.
I love
what
this.
I like in the article is the quote that all-consuming, life-force-sucking schedule is reportedly common among the country's big technology companies.
Life-force-sucking. Well, yeah, if we find things we like, 996 is not a problem. I mean, that logic of, you know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, and blah-de-blah-blah. If you don't like your work, every minute is torture, he says. Well, that's really not true. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are people who, they don't, well, I mean, I know there are people who don't love every waking moment of their job, but, you know, they can do it, and then it's that balance. It's, you know, I gotta give my 8 hours to the man, and, you know, that's just part of life. And, you know, again, I hearken back to working at Coca-Cola. I mean, you know, it was hard work. I mean, you live, you know, cases of Coke. And I don't think anybody there was really on fire about what they were doing. But, like, guys worked hard and you did it. I mean, that's what you did. Nobody was going to send you a check for free, you know, for not doing anything. But
yeah, well, listen, there's not too much at stake, you know. As quoted in the article, overwork has been linked to heart disease at nearly twice the normal rate, stress, depression, and a host of other serious health-related problems, as well as emotional and psychological implications of having a skewed work-life balance. No big deal.
Well, even if you love what you do, what about your kids? Like, yeah. Isn't this pretty selfish to be like, hey, you know, good luck raising yourselves, kids. I'll throw a bunch of money at you, but I got to be at work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. I know you have a softball game or a recital on Saturday, but no, I'm not going to be there because I love my work too much. You know, it's like, really, this is very narcissistic. And
not only do I not care about my kids, I use them as pawns to make more money.
Props.
They're props.
Yeah, I've seen this firsthand, folks, and it's embarrassing for everyone. It's terrible. And you're almost addicted to it is what's, you know, kind of crazy about it.
Well, it's if you could see the POV of my child in a baseball game. He's about to get up to the plate and he looks out to see where dad is. And dad is glad handing every single person in the stands, talking up his business, big game, just shakes his head.
Or you're off to the side of the bleachers on your phone, walking back and forth, yelling.
Yes. Screaming.
Yeah.
Screaming at whoever's on the other line.
Yeah, this guy, they always sell it like this. They always sell it like, if you find what you love, you know, like, how many of his employees love what they do? I mean, he's the one making all this money, and he's yet another e-commerce company. It's not like this guy is repairing retinal damage. You know, it's another flogging crap to everybody, and that's the most amazing thing that they can come up with. You know, it's just like, give me a break, man. It's not like you're...
Well, Alibaba is like the Amazon of China.
Yeah, and congratulations.
As you readily crap all over it.
That's
And I'm sure Maddie Fatfingers has ordered a bunch of crap from Amazon.
Granted.
Here he is again on his soapbox, crapping on everyone.
That's right.
What a hypocrite.
Right, exactly. You know, this is what Aaron Griffith was talking about. It's like, okay, but what are you doing? Like, like the woman at Yahoo, 130 hours a week, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, it is...
You know what we should do is we should create, a TV show. You know that show Undercover Boss?
Yeah.
Like, where the head of the company goes undercover and sees, like, the workings?
Yeah.
I want to do undercover disgruntled employee. So either you and I would go in and just, you know, just a big wrench in the old plans. Just destroy company culture, refuse to do anything, openly nap at work.
You know what do you remember the show, The Jamie Kennedy Experiment?
Yes.
Well, this was on only for maybe two seasons, maybe three, but it was short-lived. It was a hidden camera show, and I don't know why. I guess his name came up. He was in he's done some acting and things like that. He's a good actor, and this was a hidden camera show in the late 90s, I think early 2000. Like I said, it was only on for maybe probably 98, 99, maybe 2000. And it is hilarious. I was watching snippets on YouTube. It is one of the funniest things. I mean, at points I can't even breathe. It's so funny.
I barely remember that show.
Oh, it's brilliant. It is really brilliant. And one of the best things he ever did, I think this was in like the third season, he did a focus group where he brought people in to watch the Jamie Kennedy experiment. And he's in the room, but he's in disguise. And they're doing the work, like they're showing these skits that they'd written where he's just like up on top of a building taking a piss on some guy. and just the worst hidden camp. They weren't funny. They were lame. They were offensive. And he's sitting in the audience. And then, you know, they shut it off. And the person running the focus group is like, okay, what'd you guys think? And people are like, oh, it was stupid. Oh, it was just crude and crass. And he raises his hand. He's like, genius. He's like, this guy's a genius. And it went on like that until finally someone looked over and was like, wait a minute, you're the guy, and it recognized him. And he does stuff like playing a waiter who had jaw surgery, and his mouth is held open in a very uncomfortable way, and he's drooling everywhere. And it's kind of like a bit of a precursor of Undercover Boss, but Undercover Employee. Yeah, I mean, you're going to find no shortage. You know, I would bet you, and I think this goes on. In fact, I know it does. It's gone on in one form or another for centuries, where bosses kind of have their spies, their sort of double agents that they send in to see who's disgruntled, who's talking jazz.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I would take that job.
That's
be the
me.
Boss's spy.
That's me. Yeah. Like reporting back, you know.
Always watching.
Well,
and recording.
One of our master classes is about, like, how do you, even if your boss doesn't appoint you as one of those people, you're one of those people who takes in information and then gets it
like
back
like a sponge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and then you squeeze out all that sweat in front of your boss. Well, before Matt mentioned the master class, we're creating a master class series that we're producing that will how do we phrase this? It's going to help you succeed in the modern day workplace.
Well, I just sent you a document that I'm sure you didn't read.
And I did not read.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons I had to take a two-hour nap, because I pumped out, I would say it was about three-quarters of a double-spaced page talking about.
It might have been 125 words.
And I was exhausted after that creative outburst. But what I figured out is this, or what I thought of is this, that when you go to business school, they teach you, how to do spreadsheets, I guess, and how to monitor markets, how to write a prospectus. Is that true?
Well, I mean, it depends. Are you talking MBA or undergrad?
Either one, I guess, MBA or whatever. It's like
how. Yeah, I mean, they're going to teach you, economics. They're going to teach you about the markets. They're going to teach you about accounting. It all depends.
Now, however, see, there's a whole other component, and this is probably true in any industry. There's a whole other component to getting ahead, which has nothing to do with knowledge, talent, or hard work, right? Would you say that's true?
I'd say that's true.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I think everybody has probably worked in a place where they see somebody who's in some sort of senior level, and they're like, how in the name of God did that person ever even get hired here, let alone have a position of authority? Like that person.
I am literally case in point.
Right. Well, I'm sure the entertainment industry is rife with that.
Rife with people that have no business.
No business at all. So that's what we're trying to teach you. A master's degree in business will teach you not just the theory, but they'll teach you the nuts and bolts of how to do things. But there's a whole other level that is kind of a talent in and of itself. It's like, how do you get ahead? And it isn't based on merit. It's not based on really much of anything. It's except that sort of social intelligence, if you will, that way of getting ahead when you don't know anything more than anybody else does, and probably less. So
this is literally the cheat sheet to be the GOAT, the greatest of all time, with putting in zero effort.
Well, there is some. It's a different kind of effort. And again, they don't teach you this in a graduate program. It's like a lot of things. Like, my father went to law school, and he said, a lot of what they teach you is theory about law. But there are so many things that arise when you're in a courtroom that they never talk about, because it's just real life stuff. I have a master's degree in education. They teach you, how to teach in the classroom, this and that, da da da. But there's a lot in there where every school system I have been in, every single one, from New York to Massachusetts, you learn to never say certain things because you have no idea who you're talking to. They could be the brother-in-law of the person you're bad-mouthing or something like that. Like, you learn these things. And again, this is true in every industry, that, there's a good chance, or at least a chance, that this person knows somebody, their mother is best friends with the assistant principal, and whatever you say to that person is going to get back to the administration. They don't teach you that in grad school, but that is a fact of life. So this master class is like all that other stuff. Like, how did that person get so cozy with the boss? Well, that person is good at telling the boss what he or she wants to hear. That's what we're trying to teach you here, is how to
What we're doing is we're going to teach you how to read people. So there's some psychology that's going to be mixed in there.
Sure.
It's essentially, if you can think of it this way, you might be in the real-life version of the TV show The Office. We're going to teach you how to be the writer, the director, and the producer, so you can essentially create your own reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw a girl today in a diner wearing a t-shirt that says create your own reality. Like, yeah. Like, we're going to teach you how to be that person that you're looking at saying, how the hell did that person who doesn't seem to know anything. We want to teach you how did that person get to that level. We're gonna teach you that. You know the movie The Godfather?
Of course, yes.
Yeah. So Robert Evans, well, this is a very famous story of a person who knew absolutely nothing and had achieved this level in Hollywood that people would look and say, how the hell did that guy get there? Like, he was pretty much a failed actor, and then he had wormed his way into the production end of it, where he was the producer on The Godfather. He tried to have Francis Ford Coppola fired because he said he didn't know what he was doing. Francis Ford Coppola will go on and on about how incompetent Robert Evans was, to the point where when he finally finished the movie and they played him the music. Now, there is nobody who doesn't know that music. Even if you've never seen the movie, you know that music. Robert Evans said, take the music out, it doesn't work. Right? That's how incompetent Robert Evans was. And I remember seeing this documentary, or no, it was the book, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, which if you haven't read it and you like movies, read that book, because it's so fascinating. All these little inside things, and there's whole sections about Robert Evans. He said that music doesn't work, whatever. And this was among the many things he was completely wrong about. And someone said of him, I've never seen anybody in such a position of power who didn't know anything. Like, just, he was a marvel at incompetence. And yet he was a producer for Paramount Pictures. And that's who we're trying to teach. Now, it didn't hurt that Robert Evans was very good looking, had kind of matinee looks. But not everybody has that. So if you don't have that, you can be the funny guy. You can be the golf buddy. You can, seemingly take the helm on projects that you know nothing about and you'll never finish, but it won't matter. Again, they don't teach you how to do that in an MBA program. We'll teach you that.
Yeah, no, they're in an MBA program, they're actually trying to, teach you the nuts and bolts, which is good. I mean, you don't even need an MBA program. You could find that stuff online. The valuable stuff that we're teaching you, I mean, what is an MBA program nowadays? 80, 90 grand a year?
Probably, yeah.
You're gonna get more out of this course than spending $250,000 at Stanford.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the reason we got this idea is because they have these master classes online, and I belong to a group on Facebook called Frugal Filmmakers, and coincidentally, my a friend of mine, I haven't seen him in a long time, but a guy I knew from my film days, Jim Quigley, is also a member there. And someone wrote, and other people have written, like, what is the value of going to film school? And Jim Quigley wrote this whole thing. He's like, listen, those people will go and get their film degrees. They'll spend upwards of $100,000. And in 5 years, they're going to be getting their real estate licenses. Or they will still be hauling sandbags around set, meaning you're a grip, you're an electric, you're still just kind of doing the same thing. Which, you can make a lot of money being a union grip, union electric, and all that. I don't knock any of that. But he said, the best thing to do is to go start working on film sets. Work for free. Figure out which department you want to work for. Go talk to those people. Say, I'm willing to do whatever you want. Bring you coffee. And you might have to spend 2 years. But he said, even if you spend 2 years working for free, you have not spent $100,000 on a film degree.
And you're going to learn a lot more.
And you're going to learn, which, from what I've heard from everybody who goes to film school, and again, I'm not knocking film school. You can learn a lot. But they teach you a lot of theory about directing and writing and all of that. I didn't go to film school. From what I gather, they don't teach you how a film set actually works. Like, they don't teach you about hiring a caterer or where the best place is to rent equipment or how many grips and electrics you need to hire or hair and makeup or blah, blah. Like, there's so many components that you're like, oh my God, like, just trying to get a short film made is a huge endeavor if you're going to have any production quality. So, like, Ron Howard has this masterclass that you can watch for, like, I think $120. And he teaches you. This is where you put the camera. This is why you put the camera here. This is what you want to tell your actors. This is, you know, how you want to construct a scene. And it's like, yeah, you know, there you go. Like, there's some nuts and bolts for you. And we're going to try to teach you, like, okay, your boss is this way, your manager. How do you deal with that? Or you're in a meeting and someone says, what are our quarterly projections for the next 2 years? And they might as well be speaking Latin to you. How do you duck and dodge around that? How do you get around that? You know?
Yeah. How do you dance around that topic? And of course, this is all going to be backed by a money back guarantee that Matt's personally going to guarantee. So if you have any issues with the course, you're going to want to contact Matty K directly.
Yeah, there's a lot of fine print and a lot of what have yous and a lot of
legalese.
A lot of legalese in there. That's another thing we teach you. You know, is how to we want you to be like Muhammad Ali. No, like Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee said the best way to deal with a punch is to not be there. You know, you get out of the way. The best way to, I forget, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like deflect a blow, you know.
Yeah, you overpromise, underdeliver.
Yeah, but again, that's a tightrope though. You gotta be careful. You can't, you know, you have to be careful about your promises. You have to be careful about how you phrase them. And we'll teach you how to do that. How to leave yourself wiggle room. It's all about wiggle room, right?
It's all about wiggling. About wiggling and dancing.
And we talked about this. We did a podcast the other day about it. But there are words like facilitate, okay? Mm. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Right?
Just let that drip off the lips.
Yeah. You're a facilitator is what you do. You create synergy is how you handle things. And, you know, if you want to claw your way up to middle management, hey, that's us, you know. We're going to teach you.
Yeah,
how
you
to
could
do
either
that.
Go the Jack Ma route and do the 996, please, which will put you in a mental institution and you'll have a severe breakdown, or you could use our model and you'll be sipping piña coladas in Cancun laughing all the way to the bank. And bawling.
The mandatory enforcement of 996 overtime culture not only reflects the arrogance of business managers, but is also unfair and impractical. Yeah, I mean, you know.
You know what we should do is we should have a t-shirt made up, 18-18-7.
Yeah.
So that's 18 hours a day. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That doesn't make sense. We'd have to make one that be like, let's see, because those are the times. Seven is good.
Wait, eight, we nine. Could, what's, wait a minute, nine, oh, 9 to 9.
Yeah, 9 to 9. So it'd have to be like, you know, 6 a.m., 6 to 11 p.m., 6 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Well, I there was a hat that was around when we were at Fordham, and it was kind of a funny one. It said 24/7, 365. Boom. That's when I'm open for business. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I'm on it, okay? I'm sending you emails at 2 a.m. Easter Sunday morning because I don't have time to get into
no,
all that.
No days off.
Religious gobbledygook. I just, I'm always making it happen. Well, you know, it's totally unfair.
Well, if you're not working 100 hours plus a week, are you really even trying?
Well, you know, advocating hard work and commitment does not mean forcing overtime. And I think basically what they're saying is not only is this terribly unfair and ridiculous and draconian, it just doesn't work. Like, you can't keep this pace up. Like, there are rates of suicide and people literally working themselves to death. And it's like, why, again, to what end? So this guy can sell more stuff online? I mean, that's what it is. He can sell more stuff online, you know, and it's like, okay, that's great. Does that mean someone has to give up their entire life to do that? I mean, it's just like, come on, man.
Yes.
What? Yes, it does.
yes, it does.
Well, just to shift gears a little bit, there's that idea, but then there's also the idea that I really enjoy. I mean, there's working hard, persevering, staying the course, but then there's also what we love here at The Working Experience, making a quick buck is what I like. It's something that's non-sustainable. It's a total one-off, but it's going to get you over
catching
that hump.
It's catching a trend.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the... you brought the story to my attention. The guy who is suing his parents because they threw away his pornography collection.
This is a great story. This is a guy, I think he's like 40 years old, gets a divorce, moves in with his parents, brings like 8 boxes of his porn collection.
That's fantastic right there.
That's really, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, you could make an argument that those 8 boxes might have contributed to the divorce.
I was going to say what role that played in the divorce.
Well, he must have been like in court to be like, listen, she can have everything.
Yeah.
But she cannot lay claim to any piece of my porn collection.
DVDs.
He left the courtroom with 8 cardboard boxes of his porn collection.
And that's DVDs are pretty small.
I think it was a mixture of DVDs and magazines. So he lives with his parents. I guess he goes out, he gets a job, he gets a new apartment, he's moving his stuff in. His dad tosses the 8 box of porn, says to his son that he did him a favor. Son hits dad with lawsuit.
There is somebody who was born, like some people are born without a spleen. That man was born without an ounce of shame or embarrassment.
He estimates that it was worth $29,000.
What a
dick. But he's seeking financial damages of $87,000. I guess there might have been some mental damages from him not having access to said porn.
Yet another maybe contributing factor to his divorce.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was 12 boxes of pornographic films and magazines, and included titles such as Frisky Business and Big Bad Grannies.
Big Bad Grannies. I mean, seriously, why is he, you know, I mean, obviously you just go online these days. Like, why is somebody still hanging on? Like, this is a very deep psychological thing going on. I mean, you know, it's not about the DVDs. Like, does he seriously go back digging into those boxes
to watch?
Yes, he does. Big Bad Grannies. I mean, come on. This happened
in Indiana.
Yeah. See, this guy has problems that are far beyond that. And yes, his father did him a huge favor. Probably trying to be like, oh my God, my son is a psychological wreck. Let me try to help this. Like, gotta let go. Like, it's probably this, you know, weird pack rat mentality that people have over certain things. And I think it's something in their life that they can control. And so that's the psychological need that it serves. Otherwise, you would say, like, yeah, throw away the boxes. I don't need them. I have a computer. But it's not about that. And now he's suing
his parents. This is deep. This is deep psychological rivers in this guy's mind.
I mean, he must have nothing else going on in his life.
Nothing else.
He's seriously, could you imagine suing your, I couldn't imagine suing my parents over anything, like, or my brother. Like, none of this has ever come up. The only time I say, like, yeah, you know, it's justified is, like, you had issues of, like, child stars and their parents basically took all their money, which is awful. I mean, that is, like, just, I don't know how these families function and you know, the kids were basically suing to get it back or to have some recompense. And it's like, that's really depressing that, you know, I mean, to me, your family is there to help you, support you, not hurt you, certainly. But this is like, I mean, I guess I could see him being angry at his father the way that a drug addict is very angry at the people who confront him or her, because it's hard. You know, it's hard to change. It's hard to let go. It's hard to be confronted with things that you don't like about yourself. But to sue them, to bring this to a legal action, I mean, come on.
And where did he get the number, the estimate of $29,000? I bet you those 12 boxes were worth about $8.32. Like, who in the hell is going to... Unless he had, like, the first Playboy issue in mint condition, even that would be worth, like, a couple of grand.
See,
no one's going to buy his films, his Big Bad Granny films.
Well, now that you've thrown that title out there, that, I could say, you know, maybe I... Well, anyway, we'll leave that to another time. He probably just estimated the price, like, you know... But that number has no bearing today. I mean, it's like, who's going to buy a DVD? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but even if he estimated the price of what he paid for it, right? Like, let's say each DVD was $20. What does he have? Like, 2,000 DVDs? And what about the magazines?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I assume he came up with some kind of rubric. Like, each one costs this much. This is how much I paid for it. And, I mean, it has no basis in reality now, but I suppose for the cost. Now, I mean, where he comes up with this emotional suffering stuff is where I think a jury might be like, eh.
I really hope this goes to trial.
It puts me in mind of the guy who sued. I don't know where it ever went. I'll have to look it up. But this is like 2 years ago. This guy's parents, he was like 27, 28 years old, had never worked, you know, really. I guess he'd had some menial jobs, but he hadn't worked in a long time. He just stayed in his room all the time, didn't do anything. And his parents finally, you know, kicked him out of the house. They were like, that's enough. And I think it was an act of tough love. Like, they just, you know, were concerned about him, and they wanted him to get out and do something and, you know, figured, well, this is what we have to do. And he sued them for eviction, improper eviction, whatever it is. I don't know. And I don't think he was paying rent to live there. So I'd have to look that up. But we live in a rather litigious society, which, you know, they...
So always sue. That should be the first thing that you should consider, is suing somebody.
I think that has ebbed somewhat, because I remember, like, in the 90s, there were all these frivolous lawsuits. Like, remember the woman who sued McDonald's because of the hot cup of coffee?
Yes.
That was kind of the pinnacle, I think, for a lot of people, where I have no love for McDonald's, but it's like, give me a break. I mean, there's life, lady. Life happens. You know what I mean? Like, it's... And she was suing for some ridiculous amount of money. And that kind of felt like a bit of a turning point, where people were like, all right, this is not what our legal system was meant for. However...
Well, I'm sure we're in for a fair amount of lawsuits with the masterclass that we're about to release.
Oh, many, many lawsuits, yeah, of people losing their jobs because they followed this advice.
We're going to have to hire a good lawyer to create some fine print for us.
Well, I think the our best defense is our sheer incompetence, and a judge saying, look, if you listen to what these two clowns are saying, that's a lesson for you, and you got off cheap. You know what I mean? I mean, anybody's...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Who's listening to me for career advice? I mean, give me a break. You got bigger problems if you're turning to me for career advice.
Hey, don't sell the program too hard there, Manny Kay.
Hey, this reminds me, my father had a case years ago where these two women got into an altercation. I don't know if it was with a neighbor. I'm not sure if there was a party going on or whatever. And the police came, heard the story, they arrested one of the women who became my father's client. Brought her down to the station house, put her in a jail cell. Now, the backstory is she was pregnant at the time. And then further, I think one of the other party knew a cop on the force, so there was some connection there, was friends with somebody, whatever. The police kind of came, didn't really do much of an investigation. They just arrested this woman, who was visibly pregnant, and put her in the jail cell. So she was in there for about 8 hours. She got, you know, she was upset. She got sick. She threw up. And then they let her out. So now my father, she was suing the police department of whatever town it was. And my father was her lawyer. So he explains this to me. He's telling me about this. And I was like, okay. And he said, and he wanted to see my reaction. He was trying to like gauge, you know, money-wise is what she wanted for to recompense for this ordeal. False arrest, things like that, so forth. And he said, how much would you give her if you were on the jury? And I said, how long was she in the jail cell? And he said, 8 hours. I said, I don't know, I'd probably give her like $10,000. He was like, what? He was so indignant. And I was like, well, how much should she get? And he said, I'm asking for $100,000 and I'll bet I'll get $75,000. I was like, what? I'm like, I'd go in jail for a week for $50,000, no problem. Like,
yeah,
what are you
in solitary
kidding?
Confinement for those numbers?
I'll go in there for 6 months, $50,000, or what? I mean, yeah, I'd do it for $20,000, no problem. I'll go in for 6 months. Yeah, and I think she got something like $75,000, and wow. You know, I was like, okay, I mean, you know, my father was a pretty good lawyer, but I was like, I don't know how you put a money amount to that. I mean, it's messed up. The cops shouldn't have done that. It was dumb. I mean, I don't know how you arrest a pregnant woman unless she's armed or something like that. I mean, that just seems ill-advised. And it sounded like someone either messed up badly and has poor judgment, or the friendship thing played out, which is inappropriate. Either way, the police department should be sanctioned in some way, shape, or form. But $75,000, I was like, geez, there you go. Bing the lottery.
That's a nice little payday.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap up this present of a podcast.
All right, folks. So what I would like your takeaway from this podcast to be, when you get into trouble, sue somebody. Right?
Yes. Yeah, that is good, sound advice.
Yeah. Threaten to sue them. Say, I'm going to sue. Even
my
if
lawyer, blah, blah, yeah. blah. My lawyer, blah, blah, blah.
I also like to throw in my team of attorneys. See, that really makes...
That sets the tone.
Yeah, my team of attorneys will be on this. So, yeah, try to, you know, avoid... And again, masterclass, we talk about this. Avoiding personal responsibility, not getting nailed down to anything, being strategically ambiguous about promises, things like that. We'll bring it up.
Duck, deny.
Yep.
We'll cover all that good stuff.
Richard Nixon said very famously, never complain, never explain. Yeah?
Exactly. Like
there you go. All right, folks. Thanks a lot for listening.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media and the Still Believe app, the only app that delivers video proof of the Tooth Fairy and Santa by simply taking a picture. Download the app at stillbelieve.co today and amaze your kids. And if you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.